Welcome back again to BadQuaker.com. Today is Wednesday, October 12th, 2011. Cindy and I are still on the road. We're still trying to take care of family issues, and we'll get back with the regular maintenance on the website and podcast as soon as we possibly can. In the meantime, I hadn't actually planned a podcast for today, and I'm not taking any joy in this particular podcast. What I have to do is I have to refute a friend. I have to take the words of a person who I have a lot of respect for and who has been a friend and that I've known for several years now, and I have to debunk him, and I'm not going to enjoy it. So bear with me as I struggle through this. If I sound angry at times, I apologize. I do not mean it that way. It's just that sometimes when people who you really care about are horribly wrong in a very obvious way, it's really difficult to deal with it without emotions. So I apologize if this sounds too personal. I certainly don't want it to be any kind of an attack on anyone. Now, here's the great question. So do I expose the individual that I'm debunking, or do I not expose the individual I'm debunking? Well, I don't know. What does honor require? I'm not sure. Here's the problem. The problem is, he's a fellow podcaster. He's a fellow podcaster that I've learned a tremendous amount from. And he is one of the inspirations as to why BadQuaker.com exists. And yet, he is specifically espousing something that is dead wrong and very dangerous to believe. And I can't just stand back and just let it go by. Specifically because we have crossover listeners between the two podcasts. Now, consider I only have about 1,000 listeners at this particular time. He has somewhere between 20 and 25,000 listeners. So I'm certainly not going to be in a situation where I harm his podcast any by pointing things out where I disagree. On the other hand, I don't want the few crossover listeners that we have, and I say few, it may be as much as 200 or 300 crossover listeners between the two podcasts. I don't want to give those people the impression that I have any disrespect for this individual, or that I'm trying to attack them, or that I'm trying to steal some of his listeners, or in any other way insult him or anything. His podcast is not focused in the same direction mine is. Although we have some similarities in some of the way we look at the future and some of the ways that we feel that we need to do things in preparation for the future, his podcast is not primarily pure political, nor is it at all an anarchist website or podcast. He's not an anarchist. He's a libertarian minarchist. So there's a tremendous amount of common ground that I have with this individual, but there's two things. There used to be one thing that we disagreed with on, and that was minarchism. So we just avoided it in conversation. But now, with him taking on this position and so forcibly, and I don't mean forcibly, I don't mean by aggression, I mean forcibly by, he has a very dynamic personality, and when he takes a stand on something, it comes out big. And he has, as specifically yesterday, it's Tuesday's podcast that he did, just drags this thing right out into the middle of the arena, and I just can't walk away from it. I'm sorry. I hope this doesn't cause a problem between he and I. But I have to say this anyway. Okay, now, all the apology aside, some of this is going to get, well, no, this is more apology. Some of this is going to get nasty in the sense that, for example, I've been in many situations where I've pointed out to someone that their position was a socialist position, or I've been in a situation where I've specifically pointed out to someone that the position that they hold, economically speaking, is one of fascism. And they get all upset, and they have pictures in their mind of what they think fascism is, or with the socialist, they get pictures in their mind of what they think socialism is. And they get offended at this, rather than analyzing the actual belief and realizing whether it is or is not fascism or is not socialism. Instead, they take it as some kind of a personal thing, like, you think I'm a socialist, you think I'm a Marxist, you think I'm that I like Lenin, or you think I like Mao Zedong. No, I didn't say that. I said that the foundation of what you're supporting is socialism. It's don't confuse that with an individual personality. You think I'm a fascist? You think I'm for Hitler? You think I'm a racist? No, no, no. Fascism has nothing to do with racism. Fascism is a specific type of government. Hitler, yes, was a fascist. So was Mussolini. So was a lot of other countries. That doesn't mean they had to be these other things that you've imagined in your mind. Fascism is a specific type of government. It has nothing to do with racism or hating Jews or any other ethnic group or whatever. That's not what it is. And yet these people are really quick to get angry when you point out the facts that their beliefs are indeed socialist or fascist or whatever. Now, so who am I talking about? I'm talking about greenbackers. I'm talking about greenbackers. I touched this the other day. Now I'm forced to touch it again. Greenbackers are socialists. Guess what? Greenbackers are a particular type of socialist called fascists. I'm sorry if that's offensive to someone. If someone wants to take that personal, then it's a shame. It's too bad that you feel the emotions rather than looking at the logic. Now I'm gonna put together an argument for you as to why I say greenbacks are socialists, and of the kinds of socialists they are specifically fascist. And I'll tell you why that's dangerous, if it's not already obvious. Okay, so first let's talk about what a greenbacker is. Greenbackers have been around for 150 years or so. What they want, essentially, is they want to get rid of the Federal Reserve, and they pile on all kinds of information as to why we should get rid of the Federal Reserve. Well, you don't have to convince me of that. Okay, so let's move on beyond that. Greenbackers want to get rid of the Federal Reserve. There we go. Now, what do they want to do? They use the Constitution as an excuse, or a hammer, as it needs to be. And they want to put all money printing power, all the capability of who controls the money supply, into the hands of Congress. They want a 100% fiat money controlled by Congress. And they'll use phrases like, we got to get the money into the hands of the people. Those 500 and some thieves in Washington, D.C. are not the people. They are not the people. The elections are a hoax, and those are not the people. They are simply one collection of thieves. So when you want to say, well, I want to take it out of the hands, I want to take the money supply out of the hands of the Federal Reserve and give it to Congress. That's like saying, I want to take control of this neighborhood out of the hands of the Crips and put it in the hands of the Bloods. Things will be much better then. Really? I don't like being under the thumb of the Gambino family. I want to be under the thumb of the Bonanno family. Yeah, that'll make a big difference. So you want to swap one fiat currency controlled by the Federal Reserve, whose sole purpose is to line the pockets of a group of bankers and investors and really, really super rich people. You want to take that power out of the hands of the bankers and the Federal Reserve, and you want to put it into the hands of Congress, the people who just got through outlawing certain types of saws to use in your garage, so that you can't go to Walmart or Home Depot or Lowe's and buy a table saw that's the normal type of table saw we've always bought. You know about this new law? You can't go buy one of those kinds of table saws starting next year because Congress decided that table saws are dangerous. So they have a mechanism that they require now that's going to be put on the table saw so that if a finger ever gets in the way of the blade, the table saw will lock up without cutting the finger and destroy itself. Now, those are already on the market. But some people choose to buy them, and some people choose to buy just a regular table saw at half the price. Well, that choice has been eliminated. Thank you very much, Congress. Now we're going to buy a table saw. You're going to have to pay twice as much for it because Congress decided you couldn't be trusted with an old-style table saw. And this is the same people who decided not too many years back that you couldn't be trusted with a shower head that gave out too much water, or with faucets for your sink that gave out too much hot water, or water heaters that got beyond the heat that they decided that they needed the hot water heater to get to, or toilets that used too much water. This is the same Congress you want to trust with the money supply, and you think it's going to be different than the Federal Reserve? And you think that's not fascism? In what way is this not going to be more socialism, specifically fascism, when every Congress creature in that unholy city is entirely manipulated by business and contributions? Oh, well, their solution there, we're just going to change all the laws so there can't be any more contributions, and there can't be this, and there can't be that. Well, that's funny. Because the same people here now, these greenbackers who are saying, we got to get back to the Constitution and we got to give Congress back the control of the money, are now going to violate the Constitution and make it so that a company can't give a contribution to a politician. That's already been decided by the same government that you people support. That's already been shown to be a violation of the First Amendment. So what is it going to be? You want the Constitution or you don't. You trust the government or you don't. The levels of silliness here just boggle my mind. All right, now let's get back a little bit. So this is what the Greenbackers want. The Greenbackers want the destruction of the Federal Reserve. They want Congress to have full control of the money supply. They want all of the U.S. money supply to be a fiat currency so that Congress can just issue money and pay off its debts. Now, the way it is today, Congress can pretty much, there's almost no limit to what Congress can spend. If you give them the entire capability to print their own money, is that situation going to get better or worse? Come on. I mean, how hard is this really to think about? Okay. Now, so the other thing that they want to tell us is that fractional reserve banking is evil. All right, well, sure, yeah. Murray Rothbard has shown all about that. Ron Paul has written about it. All kinds of Austrian economists have already shown all that. We can all agree that fractional reserve banking is a scam. It's a method of counterfeiting, but plain and simple. It's theft. You're stealing the value of the greater amount of dollars by creating money through the process of loaning it out. It's you. Every time you loan money, you create money. This is how fractional reserve banking works, and it's a scam, and it's a ripoff. Of course, we all agree with that. But the greenbacks then, they jump to this thing called, let me scroll through my notes here. The Greenbackers embrace this thing called interest-free philosophy. They want to stop all interest from loans, and they think that if you have this fiat money held by Congress, eliminate fractional reserve banking, and then have interest-free loans, outlaw all interest, then somehow this is going to be the magic bullet that fixes the problem. Well, if you just deal with the idea of interest-free loans, people who would adopt this would have to be people who don't understand, who haven't read the volumes that Murray Rothbard has written on the topic of interest. This is a debate that's gone back all the way back to the days of Rome as to who could charge interest, whether interest was moral. What happens when you don't control interest, when you just let the free market control interest? What happens when you outlaw interest? All these things have been tried. This is nothing new. And the lesson of history is that the free market provides an answer, not the force of law, not the state. Now, that takes us back. Okay, so we dealt with who issues, under the greenbacks idea, who issues the money, who controls the money, who decides how much money there is and all these things. Congress. What is Congress? Congress is an aspect of government. Government is a part of the state. So, the Federal Reserve. What is the Federal Reserve? The Federal Reserve is a part of the banking community that only exists because government regulations created it so that it could exist. In a free market, there would be no Federal Reserve. There would be no fractional reserve banking. There would be no... none of that would exist in a free market. The only reason it exists is because the state made it exist. So the state created Congress. The state created the Federal Reserve and fractional reserve banking. Now, you want to go and you want to trust another aspect of the state to do what the state, to fix what the state has messed up and what the state has already shown it's not only not trustworthy to handle, but incapable of handling. When Mises talks about how socialism cannot address the price mechanism, money has a price. Money is a commodity. Money has a price, so it's just like everything else. There's a certain quantity of it, there's a certain demand for it, and if you don't know the price of money, then you can't determine how trade takes place. This is the flaw of socialism. And let's take it back, folks. The state is socialism. There cannot be a state that is not socialist. Please refer back to previous articles. I don't even have the links. I'm stuck here in Missouri without my other computer. But they're there. It's stuff I've talked about. The state is based on socialism. If you allow the state to control anything, wages, prices, whatever aspect of the market that you allow the state to control, it will mess it up because it has no price mechanism. There's no price mechanism built into a socialist economy. So for that reason, since there's no price mechanism, that affects money. So you can't determine what the actual value of money is under a socialist system. And the state is a socialist system. So if you trust Congress to control the money supply, like it already has at times and messed it up, then what you're doing in doing that is you're trusting a socialist system with the greatest of all commodities, money. And now it has no price mechanism to control money. How could this be a good idea? So once again, greenbackers are socialists and they don't even know it. Now, I would challenge somebody. Please show me an Austrian economist who is also a greenbacker. All right, so that puts a divide. If you can find an economist, an actual economist, who's a greenbacker, they're not going to be an Austrian economist. So that leaves two camps that economist can be in. They can be the Chicago School of Economics, people like Greenspan, or they can be a Keynesian economist, people like Ben Bernanke. But there are no greenbackers who are Austrians, because the Austrians have entirely debunked the greenbackers over and over and over for 150 years. Take a look. Okay, I can put links to a couple of Gary North articles. I'll put that on the website. Gary North has spent a tremendous amount of energy, time, and effort debunking and being so patient, openly, publicly debating, interviewing, questioning, and debunking the greenbackers. If there's someone in the Austrian movement who you could point to and say, here's the guy take care of that. Like, if you want to talk about roads, how can roads take place without the state? Call Walter Block. If you want to deal with greenbackers within the Austrian community, get a hold of Gary North. That doesn't mean I agree with everything Gary North says. Gary North tends to be what's referred to as a gold bug. Now, here's the big thing. The greenbackers will give you straw men arguments. And one of the arguments is to quote gold bugs, okay? I'm not a gold bug. I'm an Austrian in my economics. I am a anarcho-capitalist in my politics. And I am a free market supporter. So what does a free market supporter say about money? Well, the greenbackers try to tell us that the only other option between the only other option rather than greenbacking is having a Federal Reserve like we currently have, or having a 100% gold-backed dollar where the banks hold the gold in their vaults and they issue certificates. That's not a free market in money. That is not what I support. That, from what I've read of Ron Paul, that's not what Ron Paul supports. From what I've heard him say publicly, that's not what Ron Paul supports. Murray Rothbard talked quite a bit about that, but he also talked about a free market in money. Hans Hermann Hoppe has talked about this. Go on and on and on. We, speaking of free market anarcho-capitalists, do not require gold to be held in banks and certificates issued. Try this. The next pork fest, that's Porcupine Fest, that takes place in New Hampshire, go up there. Walk around. Buy a hot dog and a beer. And you will see that anarcho-capitalists do not want an economy where the banks hold all the gold and issue certificates. The other thing they say, well, you're going to be stuck with a barter economy. No, 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 no. Stop beating the straw man. Come back into the argument. Competing currencies are not barter economies. Competing currencies is what we had throughout the West during the late 1800s, where the federal government had not been able to influence and enforce itself upon the people of the West. Competing currencies is what was predominantly the case in the colonies and in the new country of the new United States prior to the Constitution. Competing currencies ruled throughout the Caribbean for a couple hundred years. Competing currencies were dominant throughout Europe for 1,500, 2,000 years. Going back into antiquity, competing currencies are the free market currency. It's not barter. It's not banks holding all the cash. It's a free market. Therefore, if I say I issue a coin that's a coin of Ben Stone and it has my face on it, and I promise that it's made of 86% gold and whatever other percents of whatever, if you will accept that currency, then you accept that currency. If not, you don't accept that currency. And therefore, the currencies compete, and the better currencies work, and the not so good currencies don't work. Now, here's my question. If the greenbackers really say, they say over and over, oh, we're not socialists, we support the free market. Really? How about a free market in cash? Are you really a free market? Are you really supporting free market? Then let's have a free market in cash. Let's go ahead and dissolve the Federal Reserve. Let's have Congress print all the money those clowns want to print. And then let's take away the iron fist of the state and allow competing currencies. And let's just see how many merchants will take greenback Congress-issued fiat money and how many merchants would prefer to have real competing currencies that are going to be on the open market. Are you willing to compete in the open market? It's great to be able to sit back and say, oh, my football team is the greatest football team in the world. Well, how do you know that? Because we're winners. We're the greatest football team in the world. Okay, well, we've got five other teams over here. You want to compete against us? No, 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 we can't compete. We're going to make a law where if you try to compete with those other football teams, we'll arrest your football teams and throw them in jail because we're the only football team. Well, that's kind of what it is with greenbacks and currency. You want to keep the law. You want to make the law so that, just like it is today, so that there can be no competition in currency. You want a monopoly in currency, and you want it in the hands of the state. Now, how are you going to do that? How are you going to enforce that? Well, how does the state enforce everything from dog licensing laws right up to the death penalty? How do they enforce everything? They enforce it with a gun stuck in your face. If you don't like it, you go to a cage, and if you resist, they shoot you and they kill you. That's the state's answer, and that's the socialist answer, and that's the greenback's answer. Face it. Show me how a greenback can possibly compete in a free market without the gun of the state pointed at my forehead. That means it's aggression and it's based on theft. You understand that? Is that so difficult? If the state is forcing you to use a specific currency that it makes up, that it can print willy-nilly as much as it wants, anytime it wants. And if it's forcing people not to give out loans using interest, if it's forcing loaning institutes to only give zero interest loans, how is that not the gun of the state pointed at your forehead, daring you to cross the line and have a black market in cash? Now, that argument alone, right there, that should be enough for any moral person to say, I'm not a greenbacker. If the greenback has to be enforced at the point of a gun, if that's the answer to this, if our entire economy is going to collapse unless we put this power into the hands of Congress, and unless Congress has the power to print fiat money, if the entire free market, well, it's not free, but if the entire market is going to collapse unless this happens, then your entire economy is based on socialism. And your entire theory is based on the violence of aggression and theft. Now, I didn't really go with my notes. I just went with my guts there. I want to point out a few things from my notes. The individual's podcast who I was referring to earlier, I'm going to throw out a few quotes that he made in his podcast. He says, why should we trust the people to control the currency? And then he equates that with Congress. Okay. First off, Congress is not the people. I mentioned this earlier, but I wanted to just recap it. People are the guys walking around on streets and driving to work and the ladies doing what they do and children walking around doing what children do. And that's people. The 500 and some looters that work in Washington, D.C., and the army of bureaucrats that surround them are not the people of the United States. They are simply a gang of thieves at large. Now, that may be the big philosophical difference between me and someone else who's a greenbacker. But if that is the great philosophical difference, then let's not ignore the elephant in the room. Let's look him right in the eye and see what this thing is. Because that's what I'm saying. Those 500 and some people in Congress and the thousands of bureaucrats that surround them are thieves. They are not the people of the United States. The elections are a scam. They do not represent you. Voting is a scam. Democracy is a scam. It's an aspect of socialism, and it only works to empower the state. It does not empower the, quote, people. Unless you consider Congress the people, then sure, it empowers them, but not us. Okay, so then the individual says, why should we trust the Congress? And his answer is, it's because it's what the Constitution says. Because what the Constitution says, that's why we should trust Congress. Because what the Constitution says. Okay, do I need to take us back to the preamble of the Constitution where it says, "We, the people of the United States, in order to form a more perfect union, establish justice." And then I entirely debunk that because the state cannot establish justice. And it was not we, the people. It was a little committee of guys. And they wrote that. And they agreed to it. And I never did. Therefore, I am not bound by that. And I'll tell you what. Take a look at what the government's doing. Take a look at what the government's been doing. The government has been consistently breaking that contract since the ink was wet. Again, refer back to my discussions of George Washington and the Whiskey Rebellion and his illegal activity and so forth and so on. The Constitution has never bound the government. The Constitution was not intended to by its real authors. It's simply lies to keep the people pacified. So telling me that I need to get back to the Constitution, how about if you get back to the Constitution and read the First Amendment? Okay. Next. The individual in the podcast referred to the Rothschilds or whoever as being the real controllers of the banks. Those evil rich guys are the real bad guys that control the whole Federal Reserve and the banking system and whatnot. And they have been for a long time, and they're super powerful families, and they've been, and I hear all that. But somehow, if we take the power of who controls the money supply and put that into Congress, somehow Congress is going to be so holy and noble that they won't be influenced by these super rich people? That Congress themselves are not elected through the support of those same super rich people? Are we really so naive that we believe that the people who control and own the Goldman Sachs and the J.P. Morgans and the Federal Reserve and Chase Bank and Bank of America, are we really so naive that we think that the people who own those don't own the Congress? Do you really think that? Do you think that if we switched everything and the Congress printed the money instead of the Federal Reserve, do you think suddenly the Rothschilds would slap themselves on the forehead and go, "Doh! How did we miss that?" Or do you think they would just shift the checks as far as who's getting this check and who's getting that check? And they would just continue to manipulate the system as they have done. Okay. Okay, now the individual, again, in the podcast, talks about how the banksters, the evil Rothschild families, and the evil super rich people, and through the Federal Reserve, are driving the economy off a cliff. And then he makes the comparison that basically what they're doing is they're driving America's economy off the cliff so that they can then essentially purchase it cheaper until we build it back up, and then they can purchase it again. And there's kind of a... Now, I will agree to a large extent in a way on this, but I don't think the individual is putting the pieces together exactly right. I would refer back to my article, and sorry if I don't have a link to it. I'll try to put a link on the webpage here, where I talked about stupid or evil, evil or stupid. When we see these conspiracies, we see these things that look to us to be just too obvious to have just been done by chance, and we ask ourselves, is this the stupidity of government, or is this actually evil? Is this actually a conspiracy? Well, yes. The greater conspiracy of the state, not the Rothschilds, not the Federal Reserve, not Congress, not GE, not BP Oil, the puppet master, the state. The state has an intent and a plan. And all the bozos out there hanging on the puppet strings are just doofuses. They're just reacting according to the situation that they're in. So they are the stupid, and the evil controls them, and therefore the plan continues. Now, eventually I'm going to do this article on the Gilded Age and the vast amount of wealth that was being pumped into the working class of not only Europe, but the United States and many other areas as well, and how when the Federal Reserve came in 1913, its whole purpose was, yes, to loot that group of people. And they did so from 1913 to 1945. They just sucked the wealth right out of that class of people. Eventually, I'll get an article on that. But that's what's happening today. We have built back up a certain amount of wealth. We're one of the more wealthy nations in the world. There's a lot of wealth within the working class of America. So those organizations, yes, are going to suck that wealth back out of America and bring us back down to a level like we were post-World War II. Look around at houses that were built in 1945 to 1955. Look at those houses. Compare those houses to the ones that were built between 1900 and 1913. And now look at the houses that were built in the 2000s. Now get ready to start seeing those houses that look like the ones post-war, because that's the direction housing's going to go. Because the wealth is being sucked out of this country to lower us down. And it is to enrich those on the top. But there's a purpose, and the purpose is not so the Rothschilds can get rich or some evil group of the Illuminati or whatever. Those are all just tools of the state. Recognize what the state is. The state is bigger than any of those people. Rothschilds live and die, but the state lives on. And the state has a purpose, and it's not just to fill its pockets. It's world domination. It's right there from, go back to my article on the state is God, or go back to my article on, read my article on a natural view of rights, instinct, or law. Go back to my article on a general theory of liberty, tyranny, and sin. What we're looking at, take a look at Am I My Brother's Keeper? These are articles that I've written on this topic. What we're talking about here is a creature that has existed since mankind chose himself as his God and abandoned natural law. This creature is the state. This creature is beyond any wild conspiracy that we might think, oh, but what about the New World Order? What about the Illuminati? What about the Rothschilds? What about the Freemasons? What about the Zionists? Set all that noise, all that fog, push it aside. Look at the puppet master. The puppet master is the state, and the state is that God humans created when we chose man's law over natural law. That's the state. It exists in our minds, and as long as we believe in it and trust in it, it exists, and it manipulates, and it drives us to ruin as a species, because it is unnatural. It is against natural law. It is against our direction that we were created for. And now let's take that back to the greenbackers. The greenbackers want to put the capability to control the money supply in the hands of Congress. It seems like those words alone should be enough. You should just go, yeah, and run when you hear those words. Put the money supply in the hands of Congress. Let's see. That would be like, I don't know, putting an ad out for child molesters to babysit your children. Hiring a jewel thief to safeguard your diamond necklace. Wouldn't that be kind of like having Congress have complete control over the money printing process?
How's that worse than now?
It's both. Both are bad. The Federal Reserve is evil. Congress is evil. Don't give me a choice when evil on the left or evil on the right when they're both evil. Back to the podcast that I was talking about. The individual on the podcast actually said there's no difference between the two parties. He actually said that. He said, hey, here's a quote. Who you vote for, it doesn't matter. They control both sides. Then why would we want to put them in trust? Why would we want to put them in control of the money supply? How does that make sense? All right, so I want to get to some books. Oh, no, before I do books. So let me sum up. The Greenbacker says government created a problem. Government gave power to the Federal Reserve, and government created this problem. So we should trust government to fix it. Government created the problem by creating the Federal Reserve and trusting the banks with all the money supply. Therefore, we should have government fix it. That's some serious faith right there. That is some walking on water faith. Except that's not walking on water faith in anything except a false god. Now, the individual was concerned about coming catastrophes, things that we might be facing with a money meltdown that's coming at us. He was talking about current hints that we have that law enforcement is breaking down, and it'll break down more in the future. He's talking about how riots can turn to violence, and these things could come upon us at any time. He's very concerned about this, and he's concerned about the government's failure to be able to keep law and order and peace. And yet, you want to trust them with the money supply? What is the purpose of government? Anybody who really believes that the state is a good thing and we must have a state-based government with aggressive force and taxation, all the things that come with it, the things they say that are the legitimate purpose of government is things like keeping the peace, justice, protecting us internally and from enemies abroad. But if they can't do those basic things, why would you think they can control the money supply? Now, I want to mention specific types of media that have been thrown out by the Greenbackers and specifically were referred to on the podcast that I'm attacking. Secret of Oz, that's something I talked about on a previous podcast some time back. I'm not sure exactly when. The Secret of Oz has been thoroughly debunked. The debunking is out there already. It's been picked apart. It's been shown that it's entirely... It shows a high level of ignorance of actual economics. They use half-truths, and they use mistruths, they use misquotes. It's already been debunked. I'm not going to even take on the Secret of Oz. The next thing is a book called Aftershock. Now, there's actually been several books and a movie called Aftershock, but only one of them actually deals with the economy. This was a book that was first, and you can check this out, go to, there's a pretty good debunking on it, several pretty good debunkings on it at Amazon.com on their reviews. But essentially what happened with this book is that it was first written, I think, around 2006 or so, and I think it got its first printing in 2007. And it made some very, I think it was first printed in 2007, and it made some vague references to a coming financial problems, but it was not that specific. And then what it did say was only partially right, but then there was a reprinting of it in 2009. And they went back and they adjusted it carefully, and they made it appear that it had totally predicted the 2008 bubble bursting, the crash in 2008, which it actually hadn't. Then they really get a little fuzzy with it. Let me roll down a little bit here in my notes. Well, the one thing that should strike you first off with Aftershock is that it was initially marketed with a late-night TV infomercial where they had one of these ticking clocks in the background. First 1,000 callers get a free book. And it clicks off like 999, 998. And it uses these late-night infomercial tactics. You can find this if you look around on YouTube for it. It's really hokey. It's pure late-night infomercial nonsense. Now, you know what? I don't care what they're selling late night on an infomercial. If they're using those tactics, a big red flag should go up your mind right there, okay? And then they use this for the first 1,000 callers are going to get it free. Run. It doesn't matter what the product is. If they're using tactics like that, it's a scam. Run, all right? But it's not only that. The way the scam worked, if you did call and ask for your free book, they were more than happy to give you a free book. Who knows if they were actually counting down the thousand or not. They were more than happy to give you a free book, but they needed your credit card because they charged you for shipping and handling, which covered the price of the book. But they also signed you up for newsletters that were extremely expensive and repeated charges on your credit card. So, right off the bat, the book, Aftershock, I don't recommend it for that reason. Even if everything in it was good, I would not take it for those reasons. I try in every way not to support scammers or thieves, and that's what that is. When you see that kind of misadvertisement and trickery in advertising, that to me, that's scamming, and I don't want anything to do with it. And I'm especially not going to recommend that book to anyone. All right. However, I have been asked about this book on numerous occasions, so I've been forced to read this stinker. The book itself is nothing but page after page of sales pitch for their own stuff and their own people and their own websites and their own newsletters and their own legal firms and their own investment schemes. It's just page after page after page of more. They just make these assertions over and over. They don't provide any actual substance to support them. They'll just give you another page of random talking and references back to their own people and through their own references, and then they'll reassert the point again without actually presenting any kind of argument that supports it. Now, next on the problem with the book Aftershock is that the authors clearly either they don't understand the business cycle, or they intentionally misrepresent it, one or the other. Now, I don't know what's in their hearts and in their minds, so I don't know. But they clearly do not understand the business cycle and how bubbles form. Or if they do understand it, then they're just lying. My next note on the book is that the book talks about predicting markets using the numerical simulation models. Oh my, come on. First off, this was a trendy thing in the 1800s. It was debunked in the 1800s. Mises took it on. Hayek took it on. Rothbard spent an agonizing amount of time just picking this thing apart and tearing it down. And I don't feel like dealing with it. You can't predict the market using numerical simulation models. It has been completely debunked. All right. So then what are we going to do? I don't want to leave you sitting there saying, well, Ben has torn this thing down and he hasn't given us anything back. He hasn't given us anything to replace it with. Well, I want to make sure that you do understand there is a thing to replace it with. There is a thing to replace the idea of greenbacks with. There is a thing to replace the idea of the Federal Reserve. But the state cannot bring it on us. The state cannot enforce it. The state cannot provide it. The market will provide it when the state collapses, and even before the state collapses, as we all together move towards a free market, at first a black market, eventually a free market. And that includes a free market in currency. That includes things like AOCS and the Shire dollars. Shire, they don't call it dollars. Shire, what do they call that? Oh, my. There is a link, actually. There's several links at Bad Quaker, but I'll try to put a link if I can remember. I'm working on a lot of worn-out brain cells here. But the folks at Shire Silver show you exactly how a free market currency can work. We don't need the permission of the government. We don't need the permission of the state. We don't need the permission of Goldman Sachs or the Federal Reserve or anybody else. We can have currency competition now, today. It has to be black market at the moment, to a certain extent, but we can have it today. And when the state collapses, we will have it. And then the market will decide what is best. Who knows? It may be gold. It may not be gold. It may be banana peels. There's no way of knowing. There's no way of predicting anything that's in the future, because the future's not written yet. So now, in the podcast that I've been attacking from my friend, who I hope after he hears this, I hope he's still my friend. It's not my intention to upset him or anger him or even offend him. I hope we can be friends on this. But his advice, I'm going to break down his advice on how to deal with the future. His advice is, first, get out of debt. Good advice. My advice as well. Two, reduce your expenses now. Good advice. Do that. Reduce your expenses. Third, convert cash into things of value. Yes, that can be food, that can be tillable land, that can be private land that's away from someplace that might turn into a riot. That can be pretty much anything that holds its value, including precious metals hold their value. Next, he says, stash cash. He didn't use those words. He said to have a supply of cash. Move your IRAs or whatever investments you have into cash-based. Why would you do that? He is expecting the dollar to be devalued by about 50%. Well, I would say the dollar's already been devalued by over 99% at this point. Sure, it's going to devalue by another 50%. I believe that. Believing that, why would I want to put any kind of trust in cash? Why would I want to save one nickel if I didn't need to? Why wouldn't I put that same nickel into buying something else that's going to hold its value, like food, like lead, like silver? Okay, build skill sets. That's always a good idea. That's one of his pieces of advice. I would say the same. Build a skill set. Make yourself valuable. Build community. Yes, we do. We need that. We need a black market community. We need a community of black market real estate agents, black market bankers, black market everything, because the state's going to die, and we need to not die with it. Next, he says, perform a risk assessment in your life. Yes, good. I like that. Look at yourself. Look at what kind of risks you're facing. What kind of disasters could you face in your life? Loss of job, tornado, a riot gets out of control in your town. Figure out what your risks are and what you can do specifically about those risks. And his last word of advice is, believe in America and the founding fathers and their words. Well, when you take the founding fathers and you lump them all into this homogeneous blob and you say, oh, they were great, let's worship the founding fathers. Well, Elizabeth Higgs and I touched on that a little bit. There's some pretty nasty people that we call the founding fathers. As a matter of fact, they hated each other enough that one of them shot another one. That's right. The founding fathers were not one group of people. They were just individuals who happened to be there at that time, and they're no different than any other group of individuals at any other particular point in time. Alexander Hamilton was a pretty bad person. Aaron Burr shot him and killed him, gut shot him, and it took him some time to die. My opinion, Aaron Burr was about 40 years too late. Aaron Burr should have gut shot him 40 years earlier. And not only him, a lot of others. I would make the argument that it'd be better if George Washington had never been, well, anyway. I don't trust the Founding Fathers any more than I trust any other group of gangs, any other gang of thieves that try to put together some kind of a government that uses force and aggression and lies and then tries to inflict that upon me. I don't trust the Founding Fathers any more than any other group of thieves. Okay, please check out Gary North's links. I have no affiliation with Gary North whatsoever, but if you're thinking about Greenback, the theories of Greenback, check out Gary North. He has completely exhausted these people and taken them to the point where they won't even talk to him anymore because they know he will just take their words and beat them over the head with it, because what they say is not based on sound economics of any kind. It is based on socialism. And it won't work. It never has worked. It's been tried over and over. Okay, folks. I think I've beat this mule as much as I can possibly beat it. Don't be a greenbacker. Don't be a socialist. Don't be fooled by the puppets of the state. Realize what our enemy is. Our enemy is that puppet master. Our enemy is when humankind chooses that man is the lawmaker rather than nature being the lawmaker. Thanks a lot for listening. For more articles on liberty, the zero aggression principle, and property rights, go to badquaker.com. Thanks, folks.